Be very, very quiet. Elmer Fudd is hunting wabbits. It's the Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast. A podcast that loves Italian beef sandwiches from Wrigleyville South in Austin, Texas. Ignoring red left turn arrows, it's Medicare expert Doug Jones.
Hello, everybody. Normally, I have a very cheery intro to the podcast episode that we're going to be sharing with you today. And I like to talk about my books that are for sale and all the ways I can help you through Medicare. And it's just that's my typical way of starting the episode. But today we have a totally different arrangement. We have a return guest in the studio, Roy Brotherhood, who was with us a few months ago. And I don't remember what we discussed a few months ago, but I know he was looking at shoulder replacement surgery at that time. And so he went through the shoulder replacement surgery, and he is here to tell the tale. Hello, Roy. Thank you for joining us.
Doug, how are you today? Randy, good to see you again.
That Randy doesn't hear that very often, so he's very pleased.
Oh, my gosh. Someone said, glad to see me. Oh, I really like Roy.
Well, yeah, he's turns out he's half blind. That's the problem. Anyway, so we're all here gathered to share some of Roy's adventures. And I made a list of Roy's adventures, barely fit on the page. I thought I was going to have to use the other side of the sheet. But you said that you were comfortable going right down the list of things that I chose that you might want to talk about.
Absolutely.
So why don't you just launch in and we'll ask questions as you go.
Well, how detailed do you want to hear about shoulder replacement surgery?
Well, we saw a video that was very frightening.
I know.
And frankly, perhaps just an overview for those who are contemplating shoulder surgery. I don't want to scare them off, but yet a realistic description of what's involved. Okay. And what the recovery process is like might be helpful for those who are facing that kind of thing.
Okay. Well, at our age, I hate to say our age.
But yeah, and we do share the same age. Roy is just a couple of months younger than me. For about a month and a half every year, he gets to point fingers and laugh because I'm an old man.
You're an old man.
And then he has a birthday in March and catches right up with me.
We're all caught up. But anyway, so the type of surgery I had is called a reverse shoulder replacement. And that was just a little history on it. It was developed in France and approved in the United States in 2005.
Wow, so it's fairly recent then.
It's very recent. So they haven't got a lot of years of results on it, but the results they have is good. And it was a surgery developed for people our age that blow out their rotator cuff.
Now, you had rotator cuff surgery a few years ago, right?
11 years ago, I had rotator cuff surgery on my right shoulder.
Okay.
And that was repaired, and it's still doing well. As we get older, when you have what's called full fictus tears, there's four tendons that make the rotator cuff. And when three of them are completely torn and the muscles aren't working, and if you recall, I couldn't lift my arm out of my lap before surgery.
Right.
Then they deem it unrepairable at our age, and they talk about this reverse shoulder.
Okay. So basically, had you had this shoulder done 11 years ago before it got worse, would that have necessitated all of this replacement, or could you have had a less intensive?
They would have probably still done their reverse shoulder.
Okay.
And then the term reverse comes in is that they typically the socket is in your shoulder or the in the scapula of the shoulder, and the ball is in the humerus or the upper bone of your arm.
Okay.
They reverse that. They cut those parts off. They open up your shoulder. They cut those parts off, and they put the ball in your shoulder and then the socket in your arm.
Oh boy.
And then they disable the rotator cuff, which is already gone, and they hold everything together using the deltoid muscle over your shoulder.
All right, now you sent me the video of what was going to happen.
Was that the animated video?
Yes.
Yeah.
And it was frightening, and just even being a cartoon, it was frightening. Had it been real life, it would have I would have fainted, I'm sure.
It's pretty gory.
But my question is, I had a question. I think the question was, I don't know. If I had a question, it wasn't important. Please go ahead.
Okay. So anyway, the deltoid muscle does everything to hold the entire apparatus together. The result, and that's done because the rotator cuff doesn't function anymore, and the rotator cuff is what holds your shoulder together normally. So then you have to go through physical therapy to get the deltoid muscle to do things it hasn't done before.
Okay. Things that it's never done before?
Never done before.
Because everything is backwards now?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Got the biceps muscle is tied off a little bit differently because the part of the tendon for the biceps is gone. So they have to do that a little bit different. So anyway, I had the surgery on November 30th. The surgery, I don't remember anything because I went to sleep and I woke up. And
that's the best part of surgery, isn't it?
Falling asleep is fun because it's always good on drugs.
And yeah, I should interject here that Roy was advised he had a surgeon recommended to him that turned out to be the same surgeon that replaced both of Mary's knees. Yes. And so we were able to tell him what he would expect, you know, from the office staff and everything else. But he had his surgery in a hospital, and Mary's knee replacements were done, or the second one anyway, was done in a facility that the surgeon owns. So I don't know if that necessitated any different thing.
I don't know. And from what the Dr. Gruber told me is that Medicare will not pay for the surgery if it's done in a surgical center.
Oh, okay.
It has to be done.
Maybe because it's still sort of new?
No clue on that one, sir.
Gotcha.
But I was happy to be there.
And did they kick you out or keep you overnight?
No, they kicked me out. I was there, I think I arrived around 6:30 in the morning, and I was home by noon or 1 o'clock.
Ready to do lawn work and stuff?
Ready to go to sleep.
So I'm sorry to interrupt you. Go ahead.
That's okay. So anyway, the surgery went well. They sent me home with pictures of what they did and everything, an x-ray. And then the recovery started. And it just involved a lot of time and slowly getting into moving things again and getting the muscles to do what it hadn't done before. So they started me on physical therapy 4 days after surgery. And I think Mary experienced the same thing.
Yeah, it was all just screaming in pain.
Yeah, it hurt.
Right.
Yeah. So now it's just 5 months later because it was November 30th, so we just passed the five-month mark. I'm probably 80 to 85% recovered in my shoulder. It'll never be as good as the original shoulder because of the mechanics of it.
Right.
I can reach behind my back and get just slightly above my the center of my belt, and I can reach down to the base of my neck. And they tell me I should be able to get a little bit farther than that, but it'll just take time.
And will more exercises be necessary or yes. More therapy or yeah.
So I'm done with they kicked me out of physical therapy last week.
Okay, that means the taxpayers are now through with you.
They're done with me.
Okay.
So now I'm doing everything at the YMCA.
Gotcha.
And at home, so I'm doing it every day at home in Dubai.
And I assume they gave you printed directions, do this, do that.
Yeah, so they're pretty good about that, and they said they check with me in a month or 6 weeks and see how I was doing and see if I felt I needed to come back in.
Uh-huh.
Or any additional physical therapy.
Excellent.
So in the long run, the excellent surgery compared to rotator cuff surgery, it's easier.
Really?
And less painful.
But it looks so much more intense.
It's more intense, but the recovery from rotator cuff was much more painful than recovery.
I remember that. Why don't you describe a little bit of that for those seeking rotator cuff pain relief? That was a nightmare, wasn't it?
I just say it's not.
Yeah,
you know, but, I had three tendons that were torn, one that had retracted down my arm, and they had to fish it somehow, get it back up to my shoulder, and reattach it somehow.
Uh-huh.
And that was about a 6 hour surgery.
Okay, rotator cuff versus shoulder replacement or reverse. Was there an injury involved? Do you remember falling and like straight arming the ground as you hit?
No, not really. No.
Okay.
It just started gradually getting worse and worse. And the doctor typically says, well, at your age.
Okay. So
it's what you can expect.
If we were really, really old cavemen, because cavemen never lasted this long, right. This would be a death sentence, I'm guessing, because you wouldn't be able to defend yourself from wild animals. Yeah. So this is just a miracle of modern medicine. It you got to go through some pain and some suffering and some recovery time. But the results, you're pretty satisfied with.
I'm very, very satisfied. The big thing is, it doesn't hurt.
That's fantastic.
I sleep through the night. I couldn't roll over or pull the covers up over my shoulder without waking up and being in pain.
I have one shoulder that's giving me a little bit of pain. I can still sleep on it, but when I wake up, my arm is stiff and I know that there's something going on there. I'm hoping that maybe another 25 years or so, they'll have even better, less invasive surgery.
I don't know. Swap it off.
That would be nice. That would be nice to avoid what you went through, because even from the shoulder replacement surgery, you had a fairly significant recovery period that where you had to sit in a chair to sleep. And
yeah, I just sleep in a recliner for about 6 weeks because I just couldn't lay flat, and it was just way too uncomfortable and painful.
And also getting yourself out of the
getting back out of bed.
Yeah.
So I slept in a recliner for 6 weeks.
Damn. Well, you're looking healthy. You walk around. You have no complaints. You used to complain bitterly every day about the pain, and now it's...
I could complain about other things, but
well, you have, but well, that's fantastic. So, if anybody's contemplating the shoulder replacement surgery and would like to see that video, send me an email to dbj@mlmmailbag.com, and I will make sure that Randy sends it out to you. Right, Randy?
Absolutely. Hey, I've got a question. I'm not a doctor, but I do play one on TV, Roy. Yeah. So as I understood what your description was, is your earlier surgery was a traditional rotator cuff surgery.
Correct.
So this one, was it essentially the new version of a rotator cuff surgery, or they couldn't do a traditional rotator cuff surgery?
They couldn't do a traditional rotator cuff because three of the tendons were totally torn. It's called a full thickness tear. And at our age, they deem that unrepairable.
Okay. So, and then, but you said that the one you just did was actually less painful and less troublesome than the first one.
Yes, absolutely.
Interesting. That's very interesting.
Yeah, the full replacement surgery was easier and, recovery was easier as well than the rotator cuff repair.
And you've got, at least right now, you've got, what, about 85% where you were before?
Yeah, about 85%. Yep.
And no pain.
No pain at all. Any discomfort I have is stiffness and tightness of the muscles and things like that.
Well, that's amazing. I'm so happy that it all went well for you.
Yeah, I'm pretty pleased with it too. So,
okay, Roy's got a whole list of things that we can discuss today. What's next on the list, Roy?
Let's see. So we did the recovery from the shoulder replacement and comparing it to rotator cuff. And you wanted to talk about the Medicare claims appeals process.
Well, that's an episode or a segment of your life that we skipped over the last time you were here.
Oh, did we?
I forgot to even ask you to talk about it. So maybe you could back up and start from the beginning of that.
Sure. And I think this is going back
couple of years, at least
2 years, maybe 3 years now.
Right.
And I've had chronic back ailments, and I've had several surgeries on my back. And I went to a pain specialist, and they recommended I do what's called a rhizotomy. It's a nerve rhizotomy where they actually find the nerve that's transmitting pain in my back, and they cut a hunk out of it just to keep it from transmitting pain.
Did I remember correctly that they cauterized?
The first one was a test where they actually cauterized the nerve with a hot needle.
Okay.
It's called a hot needle rhizotomy. And once they know that works, then they can move on to what they did permanently. So the first one is a temporary one, lasted about a year, and then the nerve recovered from it.
Oh.
This, what they did this time is they actually cut the nerve and took out about an inch of the nerve.
Okay.
So anyway, long story short, they did it at three different levels in my back, bilaterally, so three on each side, and it was submitted to Medicare, and Medicare only paid for one of the six procedures.
Now, let's back up a little bit. The hot needle, the test to see if it would relieve the pain, did Medicare pay for that without squawking?
Yeah. No questions.
And was that bilateral, so it was two different places?
Yep.
Okay. So you expected going into this that Medicare would pay for it until you talk to the doctor's staff, right?
Exactly. And so I talked to the doctor's staff, and they were getting a schedule, and they said, oh, by the way, Medicare is not going to cover it because they consider it experimental. Uh, And so I had to cough up $12,000 at that time.
And then you went to work on the step-by-step.
I went through the appeal process, and there's three levels of the appeal. And first level was just a written appeal. And after a couple months, they sent me a check for $2,000 to cover one of the procedures.
Let's get into a little bit of detail about the appeals process. You followed the first couple of steps, which were, you know, basically ask for a reconsideration.
Yes.
And I forget what step number two was.
The mean like the second level appeal?
Yeah.
The second level appeal was you have to go through all the form submission and written dissertation and all that again. And you'd have a phone conversation with a judicial...
Yeah.
I can't remember what he was called.
It was, basically, we would call him a judge. They call him a judge. But he's a some sort of... reconciliation judge or something. He has a title.
Yeah.
And so you did a lot of preparation to have this conversation with the judge.
Yes.
You sent a lot of forms and all of the paperwork that was asked for, you sent to the judge.
Yes.
And I got to hear the recording of that conversation, and you were kind of disappointed in the way he grasped your situation.
It's like he did no homework on it whatsoever. He had no clue what the surgery was about or how it was performed. And in his response, he basically said, I should go back to the doctor and get him to lower his price.
Yeah. See, that's very unsatisfying.
Yeah.
He didn't have any more of a suggestion than that as to how you could deal more effectively with Medicare in order to convince them to pay the claim.
His claim was that that it was all one procedure, even though each entry of the procedure is considered a separate procedure when you do it on your back.
Right.
You actually have to penetrate your back in six different locations.
But they did an identical thing in six different locations.
Yes.
And there was something about them not packaging it, or at least Medicare did not accept it as one big procedure. They looked at it as 12 or six different procedures. Is that what?
No, they looked at it as one.
Oh, okay.
So when billing office for the doctor submitted it, they did it as six different procedures, but Medicare only approved one and claimed, well, you were there on the table, they just did one thing.
Oh, okay.
So then that led me to, once that guy turned me down, I did the third level appeal, which is going to go in front of some sort of a board, and it's been sitting dormant for 2 years now.
Where do you think it's sitting?
I don't know. I've called twice to ask about it. Uh-huh. I actually can get somebody on the phone in short order.
Right.
And they can look it up on the computer and say, yep, it's here.
That's refreshing that at least they're not playing dumb. They're not saying, we don't know what you're talking about.
And I can go to the Medicare web appeal site, and I can still see it pending review.
Uh-huh.
So, and on that one, I did the whole resubmission of all the information, and a written dissertation of it was actually six different procedures. Took a picture of my back and showed them the six different scars from the six
different entities. That should have done it.
Yeah. So, but I'm still waiting to hear back.
Have you ever heard of a thing called a Medicare blue button?
No.
Okay. We have a friend of the podcast who has now become a client, he and his wife, and he is a very cerebral kind of guy, and he likes to get deeply involved in the details and the minutia of whatever he's working on. And he told me just a little while ago, and we addressed it in a recent podcast episode, that there is a way to have Medicare share detail about whatever it's doing on your behalf with whoever you assign that to. And he's using, I think, a couple of different apps. Now, a lot of us know about, what's that hospital thing that Dominic told us about? Jesus.
What is the name of that thing?
Not Open House. And I told him I use it, but I ignore it as much as I can to communicate with the hospital. Well, anyway, if you would rather not have to think about this and actively go and follow up, maybe there's a way that you can extract the information from them. When they do something, you would be notified automatically.
Oh, I see.
And that might allow you to, forget about it for a while. But I'll do a little more research. We just did this 2 days ago. You would think I would remember the details, but of course not. So sorry, Dominic.
Welcome to my world.
So anyway, go right ahead. I'm sorry I interrupted.
If Medicare does approve my appeal, then let me back up. They sent me a check for a couple thousand dollars. for the one procedure. And I was just saying, I would like to, my appeal is asking for the same financial consideration for each of the six.
But they sent you a couple of $1,000 and they thought they were done with it.
Yes.
They were hoping to be done with it. Prior to that, they weren't going to pay anything.
Correct.
Okay, yeah. So somehow you convinced them at least to budge off of that position.
Yeah, the first level appeal is when they approved paying for it.
Okay, so it was actually a couple of grand. It was worth doing all that paperwork
Absolutely. And the doctor, I sent the information to my doctor, and he loved it. And he also loved it because now they have a code
right
they can use that's been approved by Medicare.
Well, that's the whole thing was they had no code that Medicare would understand. And so now Medicare, based on your appeal, assigned a code to that procedure.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
But there's still a fly in the ointment. They won't give you that code times however many procedures were done.
Exactly. So I think I was going to say, my theory is if they give me a couple thousand for each one of the six procedures or even a portion of that, I get a good portion of what I paid initially in return.
Right.
It's been so many years now. Anything I get will be icing on the cake.
Well, sure. Absolutely. Absolutely. That's incredible that they've agreed to pay for one. You had six of them done.
Yep.
And they're like hiding under their beds. Oh, Jesus.
And when I call them, like I said, I call them twice. They get the same response. They're totally backed up because of COVID.
Oh, sure. Well, you know, a lot of things happen because of COVID. So the interesting thing is that once you are reimbursed, or if they adjudicate your claim appeal in a way that's beneficial to you, then you've got to go back to your Medicare supplement and ask them to pay their share.
That's a good point. I didn't think of that.
Yeah, because you have a high deductible, or as Randy has termed it, a high value Medicare supplement. So you've got an early part of the year where you have treatment and you're in the deductible part of your supplement, but eventually you will trip that deductible and they're going to be responsible for whatever. That's an outpatient procedure, I guess, right? Part B.
Yes.
So they owe you 20% of whatever the cost is.
Okay.
So... Now you owe me a beer for telling you that.
Happily pay. I have one waiting in the cooler.
Oh, boy.
So how does one go about doing that?
Well, one actually calls them up and says, how would you like me to tell you about this? And they might have a claim form, but they're going to be a lot more benign and easier to deal with than the feds have been. So it won't be the jump through the million hoops that you've had to do so far and then sit and wait. They're also going to be more prompt with their adjudication. And if Medicare pays for it, the Medicare supplement will pay for it.
Right. So is it wise for me to wait until the results, I get the results?
You have to.
Do it all.
Because their position is going to be, if Medicare won't pay for it, that means that it's not Medicare approved, and therefore the supplement isn't on the hook. So, yeah, you're going to have to wait for Medicare to get off the dime. Once they do, though, go right to your Medicare supplement carrier, and I'll help you with that. It'll be fun to watch and to report back to the listening audience.
Sure. Is there any time period where they entertain that any longer?
You know something? I have never been that much of a claim expert, but I have to believe that since they supplement Medicare, that there's no times limit that Medicare wouldn't impose on you. Right. So if Medicare eventually caves in and pays the full claim, I have to believe that your supplement is then on the hook for their portion of it.
Okay.
So let's not forget that.
I'll keep that
in mind. Yeah, absolutely. So what's next on your list?
Let's see. The continuing benefits of a high deductible Medicare supplement.
Yeah, Roy's laughing because he knows that's me tooting my own horn.
But let me just say, I love it.
Excellent.
I absolutely love it. So since February this year, everything for the rest of the year is paid for.
And I didn't put on the list what you... your other condition that you go through regular visitation with medical experts about, and I don't know how much you want to talk about it, if any.
We've talked about it before. I don't mind. It's Medicare reimburses the facility about $2,000 a week.
So Roy has a platelet count fluctuation. Is that one way?
Yeah, it's called immune thrombocytopenia, ITP. And it's where my immune system destroys my blood platelets.
And so they have to give him new blood platelets. And every week he goes to get the current count so they know how many to infuse.
Actually, they don't give me new platelets. They give me an injection of a drug called Nplate. It's a platelet enhancer.
Okay.
It causes my body to produce more platelets.
Oh, okay.
And, so at this point in time, my body's producing more than what my immune system can destroy.
Okay. Well, and that's where you want to be, right?
Exactly. And they've tested me several times. If I don't take the drug, within 2 weeks, my platelet level goes down in a very dangerous level.
And so once your immune system destroys the platelets, that leaves you open to infections or what?
It leaves me open to stroke, internal bleeding, things like that, and brain hemorrhage.
Okay.
Because what the platelets do is they keep the blood from leaking out of your veins and arteries inside your body.
Really? Okay, so the blood will start, you'll start having internal bleeding,
yes.
But you won't know that that's going on, right?
The only time I know it is it's about 2 months ago, I had a situation where my platelets were down under 10,000,
uh-huh.
And I was noticing bruising, and this was almost like a rash on my arm.
Right.
And it's called petechia, and that's where I'm bleeding injury.
Okay. Prior to that, you had an episode where they called you up horrified and told you to get to the emergency room pronto.
That's when I was first diagnosed.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I had been in for a regular physical, and they did blood work. And a couple days later, the doctor called me and said, go to the ER right now because you've got a blood problem.
Yeah. And was that the same thing with the bruising? And
I had bruising, and I thought I'd just...
You're getting old.
I'm just getting old, and I was bumping myself around. You
know? Yeah, yeah.
And I just didn't pay any attention to it. He saw the platelet count. He was horrified, and that was the beginning of it. That was like almost 5 years ago.
Gotcha. So you go in to have this process done every week, and it's costing Medicare about $2,000 a week?
I think it's about $1,800 change.
Okay.
They submit $2,900. Medicare approves about $1,800.
Right. And that's one of the beautiful things about having a high deductible or a high value plan is that whatever bill the doctors submit, Medicare is going to hack it apart and pay a much smaller portion, which then the medical practitioners have to accept. So Medicare approved is generally a lot smaller dollar amount than the billing amount that the facility would like to have. And there's some kind of legal thing about that, and I don't know what it is. Maybe it allows them to write off for tax purposes the difference between what Medicare allows and what they really bill on their, if that's the reason. I've never had it explained to me, but in any event, so people, my potential clients are always concerned, oh my God, I don't want to have to write a check for $2,700 at the beginning of the year, the first time I see a doctor. And you have had a different experience. You'll write a check early in the year before your high deductible has been met. And what do you think that check is every time you get a bill?
I think it was around $450 a week.
Okay.
For until I meet the deductible.
Okay.
So that it sounds like a lot.
Right.
It's not. Consider the entire year.
And the lower premium for your Medicare supplement plan offsets a lot of that $2,700.
Absolutely.
You're probably saving over $100 a month.
Oh, sure I am. I think my premium is $70 or $72 a month.
Right. And if you had a regular plan G, actually you would have had a plan F, you'd be up over $200. You might be at $250.
Right.
I know that Randy has another client that I helped get out of her plan F, and she was paying $350 a month, and her high deductible plan G cost her, I think, $68 or 70 some dollars. So she just sticks the rest of that back into her sock drawer,
yep.
And saving it for a rainy day. So even though you have ongoing fairly expensive medical treatment, the high deductible plan has worked out really well for you because the rest of the year you're going to pay a very small monthly premium.
Yep.
And the plan operates exactly like a 100% plan.
Yeah, basically, that's what it is after you hit the deductible.
So, well.
I'm happy with it.
And you don't mind if I pat myself on the back for suggesting that?
Go right ahead.
Well, I think you've run through the list. Is there anything that we've missed or anything you'd like to talk about? Is there any sort of complaint that you have about the studio facilities or the way you've been treated here?
I don't think so. It's pretty comfortable here. You know, it's an arduous drive here from my home.
I know.
Just so far.
6 miles or thereabouts.
think it's 4.5 or something like that.
And I would say it's all uphill. Every time Randy estimates the elevation here, it gets higher and higher. And
what is your elevation?
It should be about 2,500.
Isn't that high?
Enough? When you drive by the sign outside Carefree, Arizona, it says 2,509.
Okay.
And then you go downhill into Carefree, and you go downhill farther into Cave Creek, but then we're sitting on a hill. So my best guess is that we're at 2,500.
My home is at 1,900. So.
Okay. So you've got a few degrees on us every hot day.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that makes a difference.
Well, anyway, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me back.
And, you know, don't expect that, you know, happen very often, but get sick, get more diseases, and then we can talk about that stuff.
Yeah. That's the bad thing about coming here. We talk about what's wrong with us.
Well, absolutely. But I'm hoping that some audience members might find it helpful. A couple of people told me that the knee surgery stuff that we did with Mary was very helpful to them. Excellent. Mary was not as she was reluctant to come in and actually be interviewed like you are. So thank you for doing that. Well,
my pleasure. I enjoyed it.
So, okay. Well, Randy, could you tell everybody about the books? Because I neglected to at the beginning.
I will. Well, first of all, I want to thank Roy Brotherhood for joining us again. You know, that's something that's very, very interesting to some of our audience. It's interesting to me. You know, I'm a detail freak. So thank you for joining us. And thank you for sharing with us a second time. But in terms of everything that's available in term to get information about Doug Jones and Medicare for the Lazy Man and all the good stuff that we offer, he has several ways to get that. One is the paperback, which is the Medicare for the Lazy Man 2023 version with the orange numbers on it, available at Amazon.com. There's also the audio version, the Kindle version. And that is also sold at Amazon as well as Barnes & Noble. So check it out. I don't know, maybe in honor of Roy, let's think about offering a sale. You know, I think it'll be a typical sale. I think Doug will probably approve it. You know, if you order six copies of Doug's book, you pay for six. That's our typical sale. And everybody likes that. So ultimately, let's go ahead and do that in honor of Roy. And find a place, if you can, to give us some ratings. 5 stars would be really nice on our podcast because we're always up against the rating wars. We would like a rating on the podcast and the book, if you could. We would certainly appreciate that. But in the meantime, you have just spent about 32 and a half minutes with Doug Jones, the anti-insurance guy, currently living behind Cave Creek, but originally from Oklahoma. He's in a fortress of solitude today. He spends a lot of time there, and today I'm going to clock him in at about 9,653 feet.
That's just because I have company. Thank you very much, everybody. We'll look forward to talking to you next time.